Thank you again. Love it. One of the things we're trying to do this morning is to offer what is for us a typical Sunday service. For people who are either here for the first time or have been attending just recently, I've already done an end run on that with the words for reflection, asking you to help me with it. And I'm going to upset the apple cart just a little more at this point. I'm putting you guys through your paces this morning. I'd like you to help me do something. I don't believe I have done this before in leading off a sermon, but I'd like you to take your hymnal, turn to responsive reading number 466. Consider this a companion piece to the words we shared a little earlier. The title is Religion, written by the late Reverend Vincent Silliman. I believe he passed away just a few years before I came into the Unitarian Universalist ministry. As we did earlier, let's share this one together too. I will ask you to read the italicized portion. Let religion be to us life and joy.
Let it be a voice supremely challenged to the best we have and may be. Let it be a call to satisfaction.
Let religion be to us a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us serve more eagerly the true and the right.
Let it be the sorrow that opens our eyes to sympathy, understanding, and service to suffering humanity.
Let religion be to us the wonder and lore, that which is only partly known and understood.
And an eye that glories in nature's majesty and beauty, and a heart that rejoices in the deeds of kindness and courage.
Let religion be to us security and serenity, because it is truth and beauty, because of the enduring worth and power of the loyalties which it engenders.
Let it be to us hope and a purpose, and a discovery of opportunities which express our
religion, uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere.
Holding before our eyes the prospect of a better life for humankind, which we each may help to make actual.
Thank you. I've always had a fondness for these words. As I recall, the first time I ever used them in a service was in one of the very first worship services I led after I entered the Unitarian Universalist ministry, after shifting my affiliation from another denomination. It was in the small church that I served as my first settlement upon the coast of Maine. This congregation had originally been a Universalist, came out of the Universalist side of the family, and they were used to having responsive readings in their services. I was right at the beginning of my ministry. I didn't want to upset that apple cart too much, so I figured I'd go with the program here, and I picked one out. I'll confess, I didn't give a whole lot of thought to it. I just happened to flip to this one. It was in the old blue hymnal that preceded this one as well. I thought, yeah, this sounds okay. I'll go with it. And as we read it together, though, I remember these words of Vince Silliman's had an impact upon me I was not quite prepared for. They had the effect of confirming for me the decision I had made to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. I stood there even as I was reading the thing, thinking, yeah, this is what I think religion at its best is. This is why I've decided to stay with it. Life and joy, sorrow and sympathy, dissatisfaction with things that are, makes us want to serve the right, the wonder and lure of what is only partly understood, glory in nature, deeds of kindness and courage. So I stood there reading that thing, and these words kind of set my mind and my heart going off in all these free association kind of directions, so that when the congregation finally finished it, I had to go like, oh, wait, I'm still up here leading a service, you know, stay with me here, which I think I managed to do. And this experience of mine, as I've come to see, is not at all unlike that of a number of people who tell me about how they came to be a part of a Unitarian Universalist liberal religious congregation. Very often goes along the lines of, well, I heard this or I saw that, and I decided right then and there that this was the place for me, and I was home at last. This tends to reinforce a long-held opinion of mine that religion of any stripe is something that is more caught than it is taught. It has to grab you on some level other than or in addition to your head if it's really going to take. And I say that as someone who regards a portion of this liberal ministry to which I am entrusted as a teaching ministry. We UU types are generally regarded, fairly or not, as kind of heady folk. And we like to think and talk and bad ideas around and bring up books we've read, which I'm going to do a little bit later here. So there's a fair amount of truth to that, although I don't think it completely characterizes us by any means. So I say, whether that's a fair characterization or not, I still believe at base that this liberal faith of ours, in order to take, it has to be caught as well as taught. So now if we can use both Ben Silliman's words that we just read together and couple them with Ralph Hulverson's that we used a little earlier, between them I think they offer a pretty good expression of what we mean by religion when we call ourselves a religious community. For what these two Unitarian Universalist ministers are describing is religion as a stance towards life and living, more so than subscribing to a creed or a set of practices. We have certain principles we share in common. I'll speak to them in just a few minutes. And while we don't have a prescribed liturgy that we are mandated to follow every Sunday, like many of our UU congregations, this one included, we've developed certain rituals of our own over the course of our ongoing life. But before I go in that direction, let's consider for just a minute or two those few words of the Helverson meditation back during our words for reflection, where he says, deep within ourselves resides a religious impulse. Well, that's a pretty sweeping statement when you think about it. Each one of us as human beings has some kind of religious impulse deep inside us. Sweeping as it may sound, I think the statement is true. Doesn't mean we all have an impulse to get up and take ourselves to a house of worship on a regular basis. If everybody out there felt that way, I don't know where we'd put everyone here, for that matter. Nor does it mean that we all have a common impulse to up and subscribe to a certain set of beliefs and practices, because we don't. I think the truth of Helverson's words runs much deeper than that. I think he's saying that deep within all human beings, a yearning and a reach towards greater levels of meaning and purpose than we generally find in the day-to-day rubrics, the necessary rubrics, to be sure, of daily living. I think he's saying there's a reaching and a yearning within everyone toward greater levels of relationship with our fellow human beings, with our earth, with all of life itself. Again, a relationship we don't always experience in the course of day-to-day living. And while it may not be a supreme being, in my case it's really not, while it may not be a supreme being, I believe Helverson is also saying that we have a yearning for a connection with something that is greater than ourselves, however we may name it. God, the force, the great mystery, the spirit of life. The language is not as important as the reality. So Helverson is identifying, he's talking about fundamental human drive, from which I believe the many and vastly varied religions of the world have sprung. They are each and all attempts. Some of those attempts, I say, are certainly healthier than others. But they are each and all attempts to respond to this, what Helverson is calling the religious impulse. Which again is why I feel religion is primarily caught. And then it is taught according to the dictates or principles of one religious community or another. So what I want to do for the remainder of these remarks then is to share with you how we in this liberal religious community and faith tradition, how we attempt to respond to, how we try to live out this deep and I feel universally held religious impulse. Our behavior, start on the surface, is like that in many faith communities, especially those in the Free Church liberal Protestant tradition, which is where our roots are. We gather for worship in a setting like you see here. We provide religious education for our children. We offer group experiences, small group experiences for members and friends, covenant groups, study discussion groups, meditation, spiritual development groups. We care for our members and friends when they need care and nurture and personal support. We stand with one another in times of loss and crises. We celebrate with one another our successes and triumphs. And we have committee meetings and board meetings, and we have to raise money to stay in operation and all that sort of thing. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't be able to do any of the other things I just mentioned. But do any of these things, fine as they are, make us a religious community? Or are we just a bunch of folks who go through the motions of a religious community? That's one of the critiques that gets leveled at us from time to time. I want to come at that one by sharing with you a few words by a friend and colleague of mine, the Reverend Bruce Marshall, published a book some years ago called A Holy Curiosity. Here's part of what he wrote there. I am pursued by a set of questions. Who am I? What do I trust? And what do I find meaning? How do I understand death? And who or what is God? What brings me hope? From these questions of human existence has come my calling to the Unitarian Universalist ministry. And I would add that it's an encounter with these questions. It is being caught by these questions that call persons, whether they're being called to the ministry or not, to a community like this one. But we seek to offer a setting, a supportive, a caring, and a challenging community where those who've been caught and called by these questions can pursue them and find their answers. A difference between us and, speaking with all due respect, to a more orthodox or doctrinally oriented religious community is that we do not presume a single, one-size-fits-all set of answers to these questions of human existence. Let me go just a few lines further with Reverend Marshall. Religion is concerned with ultimate questions like the ones just named. Each faith offers responses to humanity's wonderings. Religious congregations, whether churches, temples, synagogues, mosques, or fellowships, provide settings where people can examine these ultimate questions. That's why we're here, to offer a setting for those who've been caught by the questions. My role as a minister in such a setting as this one is to speak my own truth and to offer the answers at which I have arrived at this point in my life to these kinds of questions. And I do so as a fellow seeker, as someone who is traveling the same road as you. I do so not with the expectation that everyone will agree with me all the time. That's kind of nice for your ego, but it's not an expectation. I rather do so in the hope that each person who is listening to me or whoever speaks from this pulpit will then in turn listen to the wisdom of their hearts and their minds and arrive at their own answers on their own journey. Another one of our ministers, I'm up to my fourth one now, I hope you can stand this, I won't go beyond it. John Buren, former president of our denomination, has noted, most religions ask the creedal question, what do we believe in common? We ask the covenantal question, what do we promise one another? Some of the promises we make to one another are ones I've already alluded to. Another part of that covenant is to work together to advance and promote what we call our seven principles. I think they're printed on those little cards there, kind of in the small print. Don't try to read it right now, you'll just squint your eyes up. Catch them later. They're not a doctrinal statement. They're a promise we make to one another. We covenant to affirm and promote these seven ideals or principles. They begin with the inherent worth and dignity of every person. They conclude with respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we're a part. And then we let it up to each individual to find the journey, the path, the religious, spiritual, philosophical path that will bring them to these common set of affirmations. So while our roots are in the liberal Protestant tradition, we're not a definitively Christian faith. I get asked this frequently. Liberal Christianity is one part of the larger mosaic of today's Unitarian Universalists. We are humanists. We're theists of a variety of stripes. We're people who find spiritual nurture in the rhythms of nature. We honor the positive elements and the wisdom present in many of the faiths found on this planet. And this is how we try to teach our children. Try to engage them with these questions I already raised in an age-appropriate way, of course, so that in time they can come to a faith that is truly their own. We offer a class for 8th and 9th graders called ROPES, Rites of Passage Experiences. The goal of the class is to get each of the young people participating to come to what they call a credo statement, which they then present at a Sunday service. And this year we've got 28 seventh and eighth graders in our OWL class. OWL stands for Our Whole Lives. It's a series on human sexuality that our denomination has created for its congregations in conjunction with the United Church of Christ. And when you came through our front door this morning, before you got up for our musicians, you may have seen that welcoming congregation sign underneath our larger sign. This represents a stance we took as a congregation some 7-8 years ago after completing our UU Association's Welcoming Congregation program. It's one designed for congregations that want to take some intentional steps in being welcoming of gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered persons. I feel we've been that well beyond the past 7-8 years. We wanted to get a little more intentional about it. With some forms of religion unfortunately fostering a stigma to such persons, we wanted to make a positive statement in this area. And of course, the term welcoming goes far beyond any one kind of emphasis, important as this one is. We want to be a welcoming and a friendly place for all who feel attracted to our approach to religion. We want to be a welcoming and friendly place for those who feel their lives will be enhanced and deepened and energized by being a part of this congregation. I'm going to close with this. We also try to offer a place to stand, a place to be, a place from which one can at least try to make some sense of this larger world in which we live. It's a world of beauty and brokenness. It's a world of joy and happiness, as well as one of great pain and suffering. It's a world that can bless us sometimes in inexpressible ways, while at other times leaving us feeling defeated and bereft of hope. In the midst of all this, we seek to be a meaningful place to be. This past week, I attended a book signing at a congregational church up in Manchester. I said I'd get to a book. I attended a book signing at a congregational church up in Manchester. I announced the event here a couple weeks ago. The author was Mr. Bob Edgar. He's the General Secretary of the National Council of Churches. He's an ordained elder of the United Methodist Church. He's a former congressman from Pennsylvania. And his book, here it is, is titled Middle Church. Subtitle is Reclaiming the Moral Values of the Faithful Majority from the Religious Right. Well, I'm not getting into it now. I'm going to use this book in a few weeks, I think 3 weeks from now, as the basis for my pre-election sermon. When I will urge you, in whatever ways you cast your ballot, to be a values voter. Quick side note. I was up at this meeting there, had a gathering there, and I met up with a seminary classmate of mine, whom I hadn't seen in 35 years, who's now serving a church over in Plaistow. Gotta tell you, I couldn't believe how old the guy was. Probably think the same thing about me. Yeah, that's a good guy. I went to seminary with him. Jake. Anyway, in his presentation, Mr. Edgar made an observation almost in passing that really struck with me, although I probably heard it before. He noted that all of the human beings who have ever lived on this planet since the beginning of human history, of all of them, half of them, half of us, are alive right now. Think of that. We share a world. We share a planet with fully one half of the human beings who ever lived. Well, there are many challenges, many promises before us when it comes to living in a full and meaningful way in such a world. And there are times when we also need to come apart from this world with its demands and its obligations, its challenges and needs. We need a rest now and then so can we replenish ourselves, nurture and nourish our spirits, for we can kind of come out, it's not raining today, to the place where we can kind of come out of the rain, so to speak. Be in a safe home. We want to be such a place. And yet in so doing, here's the flip side of that coin. We are anything but a place to hide from the world. We come here for nurture and for replenishment in order that we may be strengthened again for all that calls to us beyond this world. That world where half of the people who've ever lived are out there. That's the world that calls to us when we leave this place. Religion, uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere, holding before us the prospect of a better life for humankind, which each of us may help to make happen. If you are caught by these words of Vincent Silva, and by this vision of what religion can and should be, you may very well find yourself a home here. Let's sing together our closing hymn. It's number 354, Laughing Prayer.